Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Naturgy's results presentation for the 9 months of 2020. This is Abel Arbat speaking from the capital markets team at Naturgy. We hope you and your families are well and remain safe, and we thank you for participating on the call. The results will be presented by our Head of Financial Markets, Steven Fernández, and our Head of Controlling, John Ganuza. Following the presentation, there will be an opportunity for live Q&A, as usual, addressed to analysts and investors. So, without further addition, I will hand it over to Steven to kickstart the presentation.
Thank you, Abel, and good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to start the presentation in page four. I think you've received the presentation earlier today. This obviously relates to the evolution of electricity and gas demand in the various countries where we operate. Now, what's pretty clear here is that the impact of COVID-19 has continued to weigh during the third quarter of 2020. Power and gas demand across geographies seem to be hinting towards a path to recovery, but obviously they remain below last year's levels. And I think it's worthwhile noting a tone of caution regarding the future evolution on the light of all the recent developments that we are seeing across Europe and across different geographies related to the evolution of the pandemic. Okay. If we move on to page five, what you'll see here is basically a comparison between the average of key commodity prices during the first 9 months of 2019 compared to 2020. And what you'll see is that they experience decreases in the range of between 30 to 5%, depending on what you're looking at. Obviously, you guys are very familiar with this data, so we're not going to go into more detail beyond, again, mentioning the fact that the evolution of the pandemic could have an impact on these figures moving forward. If we look at the FX evolution, clear, and you've seen it from the results published earlier today, that FX has had a pretty negative impact on our 9 months results. And indeed, LatAm currencies have continued to show an ongoing weakness compared to the average exchange rates of last year. And this is notably in the cases of Brazil and Argentina, which have continued to deteriorate during the quarter. As regards Chile and Mexico, the currencies have remained more or less flat, as you can see here. Since the appearance of the pandemic and the start of the pandemic, currencies have depreciated against the euro, of course. And again, much like in the previous slides, it's worthwhile highlighting that the evolution of the pandemic may have an impact on the evolution of currencies moving forward. It's also worth noting that these important depreciations have not had an impact in inflation, and that still plays negatively in terms of the tariff evolution in some of our markets. If we move on to our consolidated results and we go to page eight, clearly the energy scenario has remained challenging during the first 9 months of the year, and specifically in the third quarter, with continued pressure on gas prices and the loss of competitiveness in gas procurement conditions in the liberalized activities, which, by the way, were also affected by one-off costs linked to the recent gas procurement contract renegotiations. The 9 months results have also been impacted by the new regulatory framework, specifically in electricity distribution in Spain, as well as the volume capacity step down, which was flagged well in advance in the case of EMPL, as a reminder, since February of 2020. On the flip side, it's worth mentioning here the progress on the renewable development plans, with two new attractive agreements signed in Australia, which John will detail later on. And it's worth noting that with these new projects, the company increases its current capacity in Australia by more than 50% to over 600 megawatts, and confirms its commitment to renewables growth moving forward. As for results, group ordinary EBITDA stood around 3 billion euros in the period. That's down 12% versus 2019, while ordinary net income reached close to 700 million euros. That's down around 31% versus the same period of the previous year. Notwithstanding this difficult quarter, the company is still on track to deliver on its ordinary EBITDA guidance for 2020. If we move to the slide 9, EBITDA evolution by businesses, again, EBITDA reaches around 3 billion euros in the first 9 months, primarily affected by lower energy demand and energy prices compared to the previous 9 months, which particularly impacted gas supply and international LNG. It's also worth mentioning the impact of the depreciation of Latin currencies, which I highlighted before, to the tune of 151 million euros in ordinary EBITDA. And again, to highlight that this devaluation has not had an impact on inflation and therefore on some of the tariffs. It's also worth noting that excluding the EMPL step-down, infra-EMEA has remains relatively resilient despite the negative scenario in regulation, which underscores the stability of the regulated businesses in our portfolio. Non-ordinary impacts in the first 9 months amounted to close to 230 million euros, and they mostly correspond to restructuring costs linked to the implementation of the efficiency plan. That's close to 180 million, and also upfront costs from gas contract renegotiations, around 30 million euros. Moving on to slide 10, we also like to show the evolution of EBITDA from a different perspective, not just a business unit perspective, but taking into account the key drivers. And here you can conclude, again, as I pointed out before, that demand, FX, and gas prices are responsible for most of the decrease, clearly very impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. Efficiencies have contributed to offset the negative scenario. While the benefit of gas contract renegotiations is something that hasn't been really visible in the quarter, given that we are just now signing some of these contracts. In terms of the cash flow, if we move on to slide 12, free cash flow after minorities and capex stood at around 1.3 billion euros, and it was mostly allocated to shareholder remuneration. It's worthwhile highlighting that during the third quarter, the company completed the cash payment of its first interim dividend for 2020. That was, as a reminder, 31 cents per share. And we have also announced the payment of the second interim dividend, which corresponds to 50 cents per share, to be paid on 11 November. We are committed to our shareholder remuneration as defined by the strategic plan to 2022. Net debt as of the end of this period, i.e. 30 September, stood at around 14.7 billion. That's around 500 million euros less than the year-end net debt of 2019. This is as a result mostly of FX, but also of the free cash flow that was generated in the period. As it is, net debt to the last 12 months EBITDA stands at around 3.6 times and slightly above the 3.3 times published in December of 2019. And with that, I'll hand over to John Ganuza, who will go over the performance of the different businesses.
Thanks, Steven, and good afternoon, everyone. Starting with Gas and Power on page 14, ordinary EBITDA declined 19% in the period, especially impacted by depressed energy prices and lower demand. In the gas, power, and service sales businesses, industrial sales have been affected by the decrease of demand in COVID-19 and lower gas margins due to a low gas price environment. In the residential segment, we have been negatively affected by the decrease in customers in gas and electricity, as well as mild weather conditions impacting gas residential demand. The agreement reached with several gas suppliers that as Steven already mentioned, should help to improve our commercial competitiveness and profitability in all our gas businesses going forward. In the case of international LNG, the loss of competitiveness in our open position has been particularly tough during the second and third quarter, where the spot prices have been at historical lows. Contracted sales already stand at 97% for 2020, and 85%, 84% for the aggregate of 2021 and 2022, and hence upsides of any rebound shall be limited, particularly in 2020. On the supply side, Naturgy has reached an agreement to extend its long-term LNG supply contract with PREPA, Puerto Rico Electric Power Authority. The agreement extends the contract until 2032, increases the annual volumes to 2 BCMs, with the possibility of reaching up to 3 BCMs depending on Puerto Rico's gas need. With regards to Europe power generation, power renewable capacity coming into operation and improved hydro production compared to last year have been offset by lower pool prices. Finally, international power generation has been lower compared to last year due to lower sales and margins in merchant activity. Naturgy has continued to progress on its renewable development plans and recently reached two agreements in Australia. First, a 280-megawatt wind farm located in Victoria State, which will start operation in second half 2022, consisting of a 15-year PPA contract with the retailer Snow Hydro. Second, we have the award of a 107-megawatt wind farm with a 20-megawatt-hour battery energy storage system with the Australian Capital Territory at a regulated tariff, which is expected to start operation in the second half of 2022. With these two new projects, Naturgy increases its installed capacity in Australia by more than 50% and will reach 600 megawatts by the second half of 2022 in Australia, confirming its commitment to renewable growth. So to summarize, Czech Gas and Power, it suffered from a decreased energy scenario in gas, but its ongoing contract renegotiations will help improve competitiveness. Turning to infrastructure EMEA on page 15, ordinary EBITDA reached €1,383 million in the third quarter of 2020. Gas distribution in Spain was negatively impacted by lower volumes due to mild weather and the economic slowdown linked to COVID-19, especially in the first two quarters. Electricity distribution has not been negatively impacted by COVID-19 on an EBITDA level, but was hit by the negative impact on the new regulatory framework, which started in 2020. EMPL is impacted by the capacity step-down from February. Excluding this EMPL impact, infrastructure in EMEA results proved relatively resilient despite the impact of COVID-19 and regulation, which are mainly compensated via efficiencies. Moving on to infrastructure South Latin on page 16. Ordinary EBITDA amounted to €590 million in the period, 17.7% lower than the previous year. Mainly is affected by negative FX evolution of -€127 million across LATAM regions. It is important to stress that net of the FX, the business in LATAM have had stable results. Besides the FX, COVID-19 is having three main impacts in our LATAM businesses. Demand reduction, which depending on the country and the client mix, it ranges from -1% to -30%, since the bulk of the reduction is on the large industrial customers, which on the other side, they have low energy margins and therefore the impact on the EBITDA is smaller. To give an example, Mexico and Brazil have experienced demand reductions of 14 and 25% respectively. However, margin reduction on both cases has been of only around 6%. The second effect is an increase on delinquency, mainly in Chile Electricity and Panama, mainly due to the prohibition to disconnect customers. Finally, there has been a deterioration in working capital due to the obligation to finance vulnerable customers, though part of its impact has been ameliorated by sharing this burden of the financing with the suppliers and the transporters. Finally, turning on to infrastructure North LATAM on page 17, on the third quarter of 2020, ordinary EBITDA amounted to €262 million, down 6.8% vis-à-vis last year, on the back of weak demand evolution, especially in second quarter and third quarter following COVID-19 crisis and a negative FX impact of minus 17 million euros, which has been partially compensated by tariff indexation in Mexico and operational improvements both in Mexico and Panama. LATAM North has remained relatively stable despite the negative effects from FX and COVID-19. I will now turn it over to Stephen for conclusions.
Thank you, John. And so if you go on to page 19, it's clear that COVID-19 has impacted the results up until the end of September. As we mentioned throughout the presentation, power and gas demand across geographies seem to be hinting at recoveries, but we have to be careful drawing conclusions based on the evolution of the pandemic. Meanwhile, currency weaknesses in Latin America have continued during the first 9 months, and in some cases, such as Brazil and Argentina, they have further deteriorated. In this context, the energy scenario also remained particularly challenging in gas, where we lost competitiveness in procurement conditions, and have recently renegotiated terms and conditions on more than 50% of the committed volumes to mitigate the scenario. So in essence, we are taking steps to protect the results moving forward. On the bright side, we've also continued to make sound progress on renewal growth. And as you've seen, we've reached two important agreements in Australia, making us one of the leading operators of renewables in the country and confirming our commitment to growth in this area. Considering the progress to date, again, we continue to state and reiterate our guidance of delivering on 4 billion euros of ordinary EBITDA for 2020. Look, I think it's worthwhile bringing a dose of reality here. The 9 months results are unsatisfactory for the company, but you can rest assured that the company is not standing by idly. We are currently working hard on the strategic update, and to be frank, we're actually very excited about how the work is progressing. We are convinced that the new plan will address key market concerns, and we will be communicating the date of the next CMD within the next few weeks. And with that, we can open up the line for Q&A.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad now. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star 2. The first question today comes from Fernando Garcia at RBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Fernando Garcia from RBC. Thank you for taking my questions. I have three. First one is, could you explain the 29 million euros upfront cost of the gas contract renegotiation? Second one, in the gas contract renegotiation as well, are you reporting already some improvement of this renegotiation in the Q3 results? And finally, in your results note, you mentioned that you are seeing an improved outlook in demand and prices in gas. I wonder if you can provide more color on that. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the questions. I didn't quite get the third one, but I will start with the second question. There is no, in the figures that we have for the first three quarters, there's almost no impact due to the negotiations. So the impact will be seen moving forward. And as far as the upfront cost that Steven mentioned, that is due to the renegotiations, is that it depends on how the negotiation has been structured. So in this case, in case of one of the renegotiations that we've done, part of the settlement that we achieved, that we think it has been satisfactory as far as improving the competitiveness of our contract, it has also led to some kind of adjustment that we had to do with to this contract.
Regarding the last question, I mean, I think it's fairly obvious when you look at forwards and when you look at your Bloomberg screens that there's a a bit of a, what you could call perhaps an improvement in the outlook of prices. Key question here is whether or not this is structural, whether or not it's something permanent. Again, based on the evolution of the pandemic, it could change. But also bear in mind, very importantly, our open position is very limited. You have details on that on the Excel file sheet that we provide you guys with. So just to be fair, you know, any improvement in the gas prices moving forward, we are not going to be able to capture the upside 100%. We'll capture just part of that upside.
Thanks. Next question, please.
Next question comes from Javier Garrido at JP Morgan. Please go ahead, Javier.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions. I would like to make an additional follow-up question on the contract renegotiations. You mentioned that they has had virtually zero impact on the 9-month results, but if I am correct, the renegotiations were looking for a retroactive impact to 1st January. So would you mind to elaborate on why there has been no impact yet, and but you still expect a positive impact going forward? And the second question on these renegotiations is, I know that contracts are obviously confidential, but if you could elaborate on what you were particularly targeting with these renegotiations, if you were targeting a shortening of the duration of the contracts, a reduction in the volumes of take. Basically, what I want to understand is what is going to be the profile of the business going forward, if you are reducing the risk and reducing the open position even before doing any hedging, or if there is any other structural change in the profile of your contracts. And then the second question is on your dividend policy. You just reiterated again your dividend policy, but that dividend policy with 5% annual growth to 2022 was predicated on, if I am correct, the distribution of free cash flows in a way that leverage were to be stable. And you are forecasting your guiding to approximately 14% drop in EBITDA, and your net debt is only dropping by 3%. So even though the net debt is falling in absolute terms, in relative terms, your leverage is increasing. So what is the rule here? What is the cap you feel comfortable with from a net debt to EBITDA point of view, or what is the metric that you are going to monitor in order to continue reiterating the dividend policy or start to reconsider the dividend policy? Thank you.
So thank you, Javier, for the questions. I will answer the first one. You are fully correct that in past results calls, we said that we should expect to see some kind of retroactive effect, because if we applied what would be the price revision clause, that's how it actually should work. But implementing the price revision clause would also have implied that we would have gone through a lengthy process of arbitration. What we've done is we've reached a negotiated settlement with several gas suppliers, on which I think that we feel satisfied with the agreements that we've reached. And we think that although in this negotiation, what we have, we are not going to see is a retroactive effect on the past quarter results, we think that moving forward, the level of price that we're reaching is satisfactory. So I think that therefore both things are consistent. One thing is what we should have seen if we should have applied the price clauses per se, but that means going through the full arbitration process. And what we are right now seeing, and what we're going to see moving forward, is the results of the negotiation. And in this case, what we've seen is that when negotiating with the suppliers, trying to implicate or to have trying to have a retroactive effect was something that would have meant other kind of sacrifices. And we thought that the best and the most important thing was to reach a settlement that was satisfactory without going through the lengthy process of arbitration. So how does that mean in the terms of volumes? We have increased the flexibility in the volumes that we have in some contracts, so we cannot go into the specifics. And in some cases, in some of the contracts, we've even reduced the full volumes. We are giving the outlook of how our open position is for 2021 and 2022, and therefore what you will see is the results of both what we've been able to do through commercial activity and also what we've been able to do by the reducing the volumes that we have due to flexibility or due to the contract, the full contract volume reduction of the ACQ of that contract. Okay.
On the dividend policy, what we said is that we reiterate our commitments to the dividend path that we set until established until the year 2022, absolutely. I don't think looking at the results on a standalone basis in COVID-19 year, which is this year 2020, exclusively is a fair analysis, to be frank. It's a good thing rating agencies don't look at it from a spot basis, but they look at it from a rolling basis. So they understand that, you know, the business may be better or may be worse at certain parts of the cycle. And that's why they take a longer-term view. So the objectives here are to, as we've always said, we have a BBB rating right now. We could be willing to sacrifice that rating if the right conditions come along for the sake of growth. We don't see a scenario right now where the rating is under stress, but we have to work towards making sure that for next year, for example, the FFO to net debt, as opposed to the net debt to EBITDA, the FFO to net debt is reestablished at levels where the rating agencies feel comfortable with. And so we are working hard on that front. But moreover, beyond that issue, just remember when we think about rating, other elements also play a role. So, for example, the business risk profile is something that rating agencies are going to be looking at from a qualitative perspective. And so I think you can appreciate from our results as well that although the results, as I've mentioned previously, have been unsatisfactory for the last 9 months, it's also true that I think the company has been taking steps to de-risk its operations. And this is something that also has a role and an impact when considering the rating. Okay.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Thank you. Just as a reminder, any questions from the press must be referred to Naturgy's communications team. Our next question comes from Jorge Gamirez from JB Capital. Please go ahead, Jorge.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you very much for taking my question. I have one which is a follow-up and then another two, if I may. Firstly, on the follow-up, still regarding the upfront costs in renegotiation of gas contracts. Since the renegotiation of the contract with Sonatrach was announced in Q4 already in October, should we assume or could we expect more of these costs in Q4 resulting from the Sonatrach agreement? This would be the first one. The second one is and also on a kind of a follow-up. If the gas prices, if the long-term, what would be the impact on your profitability, on your view of the market, if the long-term gas to oil relation does not improve? Does it question your long-term targets? And finally, this is just for me to understand. You said you are working on the details of the strategic update. Should we expect it to happen until the end of this year? Many thanks.
Thank you very much, Jorge, for the first two for the questions. I will answer the first two, and then Steven will answer them. Regarding the upfront costs, two things that they were implied in your question, and I would like to make clear. First of all, We have not implied that the upfront cost is related to the Sonax upgrade negotiation. We are not going to disclose the upfront cost to which of the several negotiations that we had it corresponds. So I would like to make it clear that we have never said that it's due to Sonatrach, first thing. And no, there's not going to be more upfront costs related to the negotiations that have been already settled. So, and that's due to how the accounting practices are. Once we sign an agreement, all of the one-offs that there are, be it positive or negative, we have to account them in the moment in which we know them. So there are not going to be any further upfront or one-offs associated to the negotiations that have been already signed. Moving to the second question, the one of the gas prices and how the oil index, the percentage that it has regarding to oil of the gas spot prices, I think that first of all, there are two things that we have to keep in mind. One is that if we look at the forward curves already in 2021, it's improving. So for example, if we look at MVP to Brent, it's already reaching levels of 10% when this year is expected to close at a 7% level. And the same happens with JKM. So we are looking at improvement in price. And also in this sense, we have to also incorporate the fact that moving forward, the gas supply contracts, the gas procurement contract prices that we're going to have are going to be better than the ones that we've had this previous quarters. But also we have to be cautious because the closed volumes that we have is 94% for 2020, so that means that 97% for 2020, so that means that potential upsides are going to be limited. And even for 2021-22, we are talking that the closed volumes are at 84% level. So that means that the level of swing that we can have is going to be limited to that. So I think that we have to see how all of these things play out.
Yeah, on the CMD, as I mentioned previously, we're working very hard on the presentation on the strategic update. Again, I want to emphasize that the preliminary things that we're seeing are actually pretty exciting. But to be frank, I mean, we've been working so hard, we haven't finished the discussion on the dates. We expect to have the dates to publish for you guys within the coming weeks. So just as soon as we have it, we'll communicate it.
Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Manuel Palomo from Exane BNP. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. I've got a couple of questions on LNG. First of all, is one that comes out from the Excel spreadsheet that you publish. And the thing is that when looking at the LNG volumes on the first half, you stated you had 140 hours, of which 98% contracted sales. So today we see that you have not 148, but 129 terawatt hours, and that there's 96.9% contracted. Could you explain, please, these changes? And also on the LNG, second one, is on the margins. We've seen that in this third quarter you've sold around 33 terawatt hours with zero EBITDA margin. What's your expectation? If you can share some light for the following course, and then I've got one on Mexico, and it's your views about what's going on in Mexico with the CFE, with all these things that are happening. If you could please share with us your views on the regulatory developments in Mexico and whether this would or could be a hurdle or could impact the returns of the existing PPA agreements. And finally, one on CAPEX. The CAPEX has seen, again, a significant decrease, 26% down year on year, and very well below the DNA figure. When could we expect some CapEx acceleration to at least match the D&A figure? Thank you.
So, Manuel, thank you very much for the questions. I will try to answer all four of them. First of all, you are fully correct in the, if you look at the Excel sheet that we have in the first half and the one that we have right now, there is a decrease in the volumes. And that's basically a result of negotiations that we've had with the suppliers that, as we mentioned before in Javier's questions, one of the things that happened, one of the results that we have of these renegotiations, it's a reduction of the volumes in some of the contracts, be it on a temporal level due to flexibility, and in some cases a structural level that is a reduction of the contract volume or the ACPU of the volume. So I think that we have to understand it in that sense. The way that we have to close our open position is twofold. One is by the volumes that we have, how we sell the volumes, and how much, how many BCMs we do have to sell. And that's one of the levers that we are working on, and that's the one that you've identified on the Excel sheet. Regarding the margins, it's true, and if we look at, in the result presentation for the third quarter of 2020, the EBITDA that we have in LNG is zero. So that's basically the margin that we have for the sales of the LNG contracts is negative in this quarter. It's true that this quarter, even though that we had a closed position, the open position that we have, we had to sell it at really low volumes because we've seen in this third quarter some of the lowest historical prices that we've seen historically. And we think that this is something that should improve already in the fourth quarter and also next year. So I would say that in that sense, the way we look at it is that third quarter of this year has been the low point and it should go, moving on forward, it should go forward. So it should improve. Regarding the third question, the input that we get from our businesses in global power generation regarding the Mexico situation is that for the time being, we have nothing to worry about, and it should not change the outlook that we have about the evolution of the business there. We don't see it right now either as a threat or as an opportunity, and that's the input that we're getting currently from our businesses in Mexico. Moving to CapEx, it's true that what you say, but I think that first of all, there are two things that we have to keep in mind, that FX not only impacts negatively our LATAM businesses, it also impacts negatively our CapEx in LATAM. And also, we have to keep in mind that in some of the businesses that we've had, due to the COVID and the fact that there has been lockdown, the level of activity that we've had has gone down. But moving forward and how that CapEx is going to evolve, I think that that answer will be answered in the capital market day that will come in the next few weeks. It will be announced.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Next question comes from Lillian Stark at Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my question. I have just two questions. The first one is if you could provide a bit more detail on the competitive landscape that you're seeing on the supply side in Spain. And then the second question is when we think about just broadly, and maybe this will be addressed at the CMD, but I'll just ask anyway and play my luck. When you think about renewable growth, just wondering if at this point you have a preference for M&A versus developing your own and building your own pipeline.
Lillian, thank you. I will answer the first question. I think Stephen is going to take the second one. Regarding the competitive landscape in supply in Spain, I mean, it's true that we are seeing an increase on the activity of the new entrants, be it small new entrants or be it Repsol, But I must say that the way we see it is that most of the competition is still, we are seeing it from the big traditional players, which are the ones who in the end are making the most active commercial activity. And at least when we look at our figures, I would say that at least in these past few months, I would say that it's true that the competitive pressure it's increasing, but also from traditional players. And in that sense, I think that in the CMD that we're going to, we will have something to communicate regarding this commercial pressure and how we are reacting to it.
Hi, Lilian. On the on renewals growth, I like your question because it presupposes that we want to grow in renewals, and I think it's the right assumption, actually. We want to grow in renewals in a way that is disciplined. And I think we would probably all agree in this call that there are certain segments in the renewables world where, because of the competitive landscape, it may be difficult to grow in any significant way in a manner that generates value or creates value. Okay, so we have to be mindful of that. In that sense, perhaps we need to scale the risk ladder a little bit to find a lower competition or less competition rather, and focus on projects that are at an earlier stage. But again, this is something that you're right. We will be spending quite a bit of time in the capital markets today. And provide you more visibility with them. But the overriding principle again is we have to be very mindful of the discipline that I think has categorized this company for some time now.
Thank you. Next question, please.
The next question comes from Harry Wyburd at Bank of America. Please go ahead, Harry.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for taking my questions. I'll try and make them very quick. So just firstly on asset sales. So you alluded at first half to potentially wanting to reduce your emerging markets exposure. And I wondered whether, and this may be something you don't want to comment on ahead of the CMD, but I thought I'd try my luck, whether you could comment on what kind of assets, I mean, if we presume that's LATAM that you're talking about, you know, what kind of assets in LATAM might you be open to selling or rotating? In particular, should we assume that would be a gas asset or might you think about selling down in electricity as well? Then secondly, just on the same theme of balance sheet. So I don't know whether you can comment. You mentioned about you could potentially be open to dropping a rating notch, and you also mentioned that, you know, ratings agencies were sort of happy to look beyond the current year. Do you have any balance sheet headroom, or is there any way you could quantify how much balance sheet headroom you have if you don't sell any assets? So what balance sheet headroom do you have to expand on sort of today's perimeter? And perhaps as part of that, I don't know whether you could give us some guidance on maybe net debt or net debt to EBITDA at year end or your projection, because obviously FX has sort of hurt your earnings, but it's also helped your net debt quite considerably. And then finally, just on EMPL and the renewal of your contract there, I wonder whether there's any sort of implication or tie between the contract renegotiations you've done in Algeria and whether that alters the outlook for potentially renegotiating an operating contract for the EMPL. And maybe even, I don't know whether you could give us some kind of rough envelope for what, and I know EBITDA is not going to be anywhere near what it used to be, but what kind of EBITDA level we could be thinking of in our models for 2022 and beyond for the EMPL. Thank you.
So Harry, thanks for your questions. The last one is the easiest one. We can definitely give you EMPL guidance for 2022 at the EBITDA level, and that will be zero. Okay. Hopefully, between now and the time the concession expires, we reach some sort of agreement with the Moroccan authorities where it no longer is zero and it's something higher than zero. Okay. Our work assumption is zero right now. And no, it's not affected by the ongoing renegotiations of contracts. On asset sales, I think this is, instead of calling them sales, we'd rather call them perhaps asset rotation. We are currently in the process of undergoing, as you could imagine, a very in-depth portfolio review. This is certainly something that will form a basis of a part of the presentation in the CMD. We've reached certain conclusions already. But again, we ask for your patience until we provide you some indication. As a general rule of thumb, and the one thing that we have been telling the market, as you are very aware of, the overall story here is one of de-risking, okay? So there are, if you think about de-risking, you can think about de-risking from a business perspective, you can think about de-risking from a geographical perspective, you can think about it from both perspectives, okay? So I think that's something to keep in mind when you consider potential changes in the asset portfolio that we operate. And finally, in terms of the balance sheet, wonderful question. We do take your feedback actually very, very much to heart. And this is why, when one of your colleagues asks about CapEx moving forward, et cetera, these are all elements that will be addressed in the capital markets today. That's why I said initially that, if you remember at the beginning, I mentioned that we are convinced that the contents of the CMD will address basically a lot of the concerns that you guys have, if not more than. So go beyond that. And in terms of the balance sheet headroom, to make a long story short, and I apologize for that, the short answer is yes, there is balance sheet headroom right now to continue growing. Remember that there are different alternatives to finance growth as well if you want to go down the road of leverage. I think some of our competitors, for example, recently showed some examples of instruments that can be put on the table to finance growth. And this is a key element that will be addressed in the CMD to give you a sense of the firepower of the company thinks it has on a longer term view.
Thank you, Stephen. Next question, please.
Next question comes from Javier Suarez from Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you also from me. Three questions. The first one is on slide number 12, and on the cash flow statement, when you are showing the evolution of the free cash flow after minorities, obviously there is a significant positive contribution from working capital. So you can explain us the reason for that number and what we should expect by the year end. What is behind that contribution of almost 550 million euros positive on the cash flow of the company coming from a positive change in working capital? Then the second thing is coming back, I think it was Manuel's question on CapEx. So the fact that the company is producing CapEx, I think that the thing that I wanted an explanation on is that if the reduction on CapEx comes from a managerial decision of the company of reducing CapEx at this point in the cycle because X, Y, and Z, or it has to do simply with the COVID environment. I'm asking this question because obviously there is an energy transition in place. I think that plenty of companies are accelerating on CapEx as we speak, and I think that the fact that you are reducing CapEx is obviously something that probably needs to be explained at the next Capital Market Day. And the final question is on the guidance for 2020. You are reiterating the 4 billion euros of EBITDA target for 2020. I think that in the previous conference call, you mentioned that this number did not include the capture costs that were defined as a one-off. So if you can update us on the number that we should expect as one-offs or additional capture costs or whatever you can call it by the year end, and what should be your guidance of EBITDA in terms of reported EBITDA as well. Many thanks.
Thank you, Javier. I think I will answer the first two, and I would leave Stephen with the third one. Regarding the working capital, I think that one of the main issues that is helping us with the improvement in working capital is the fact that we are invoicing less. Yeah, we are invoicing less because we are selling less volumes, due to the reasons that have been mentioned across the result presentation, and also because the energy prices are also lower. And I think that Stephen also gave a view about that. So that's one of the main reasons why the working capital is improving so much compared with the in our cash flow statement. Regarding how it's going to close, I think it's important to remind you that the level of invoicing that we do during the year is seasonal. So and there's a high level of seasonality. It's true that the seasonality that we have in Spain is the opposite to the seasonality that we have in LATAM. But I think that we should be closing the year with a level of contribution with the one that we're currently seeing, or even, I would say, even better. And moving to the second question, the CapEx reduction, I think that we have to bear in mind that lockdown, it has been important, not only in Spain, but also in some of the LATAM countries in which we are present. And again, we also have to stress, because I don't think it hasn't played a minor role, the fact that a sizable part of our investment is in LATAM, where it has the FX depreciation has been big. So when you take into account all factors, a big part of the decrease in CapEx is explained by that. Also, if you take into account that last year in renewables in Spain, we finished building or we finished installing almost 1 gigawatt in renewables, I think that also, at least in that sense, we cannot compare, at least in Spain, 2020 with 2019. So I think that those two, three factors, depending on how you count them, have to be factoring in explaining the CapEx evolution 2020 against 2019. And how we see ourselves moving forward, I think that's something that will be answered in the Capital Markets Day, and there we will give you further visibility about how the CapEx is going to be moving forward.
And Javier, on the 2020 guidance, non-ordinary effects would amount to somewhere between 280 and 290 million, somewhere around there.
Thank you. Next question, please.
The next question is from Alberto Gandolfi at Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning for taking my questions. The first question is, Stephen, you've been very clear about the intention of increasing and stepping up exposure to renewables. I would say that maybe you disagree, but my rule of thumb is that until an activity probably reaches about 20% of a business, it's not really quite a driver. And so I was wondering, for you to get to about 20% of your EBITDA, even in a tricky year like this one, where EBITDA is hopefully temporarily depressed, we're probably talking about €1 billion of EBITDA, which implies 9 to 10 billion euros of invested capital, which means that, you know, I appreciate you have balance sheet headroom, but not 9 to 10 billion, I suspect. So I guess long intro to say, should we expect this to be the size broadly of your asset rotation? Clearly, when you build capacity, you will generate operating cash flow, which you can use to fund further CapEx. But is a reasonable logic the one I adopted? The second question is, apologies to go back again to the gas renegotiation, but I guess my question is very simple. If we take the 9 month ordinary gas, effectively LNG EBITDA you reported, what would it be with the renegotiations you have already achieved? I'm trying to understand the €1 million improvement that you may have, or maybe you can guide it on Q4 or next year, whatever, but just to have €1 million tangible element to appreciate. And the last question, I understand you might say we don't do that, but considering it's already November, we're amongst friends, would you be comfortable with the ordinary net income of about €1 billion that consensus seems to be targeting? I mean, you have achieved an average of 400 million net income in the past couple of years in Q4. ordinary, and you know, you're down 30% year on year, which seems still to suggest probably about 300 million. So I was trying to see, can you hit an underlying ordinary of about a billion this year? Thank you so much for your patience.
So I think that, Alberto, although you addressed the question to Steve, and Steve jump in whenever you want to, so I think maybe it's a bit of a disappointment because you wanted Steve, but I think that at the beginning you're going to get me. Sorry about that. I will start with LNG because it's one of the classics. And sorry, but we cannot disclose what would have been this past new 9 months after the renegotiations because it, to a certain level, it would disclose the level of improvement that we had, and as you know, that's something that is confidential, so I think that we're not going to be able to do that kind of guidance. But I think that there's one thing that is important, and I think that when we go to the CMD, we will make it clear that we have more renewables than the ones that we, it seems that we do. The problem is that we have renewables in international power generation, we have renewables in Europe, and if we look at that and we look at the figures of these first three quarters, I would say that from the ordinary EBITDA that we have, we could say that almost 15% of our EBITDA has been due to renewables, and I include hydro within that renewable. So, I mean, it's true that we're still lagging behind, and we have a commitment to improve the weight that the renewables have in our portfolio. But I think that also sometimes the market seems to underappreciate the position that we have and the efforts that we're making. Like for example, the two projects that we've announced today that we've won in Australia. But I think that hopefully that's something that we will at least help, at least give it more visibility in the CMD.
Yeah, and building on that, I think clearly we're actually having a discussion about this with Jorge Barredo, and we all in the company agree that we haven't communicated sufficiently well on our position in renewables to the point that, you know, some people categorize us as basically almost like a new entrant in this sector, and we're not. We already have an important contribution from renewable businesses to the EBITDA, and this is clearly something that we would like to grow. Now, going as far as saying that, you know, if we are to rotate assets, all proceeds will be dedicated towards growing the renewals. That's an assumption that you know, you'll have to wait until we have the CMD. And certainly, we're not going to comment in today's conference call on the potential size of potential disposals and the use of proceeds from those disposals. To emphasize, we are making great progress in the definition of the new strategy plan. We heed your advice, Alberto, and your colleagues. We hear your concerns and investors' concerns. We share a lot of those concerns. And we are not a company that stands by and wait for issues to be resolved on their own. We take our future in our own hands. And this is why we are excited about what we have to tell you guys in the CMD. This is a key element. Our portfolio review will yield, we think, important results and interesting results that may come in the form of asset rotation. Asset rotation implies not only selling but also buying assets. This is an issue that we will be addressing for sure in the CMD, as we will be addressing the potential firepower the company has, etc. So all we ask from you, and I understand that this may be frustrating. Trust me, it's frustrating for us as well, because we would love to be able to answer this question to you today. But let's wait until the CMD. On the ordinary net income for 2020, we don't guide on net income, so we're not going to comment on your work or your colleagues' work. I'm sure you guys do the best you can with the available information that you can, and we'll have to wait until February to have the answer for that.
Thank you, Stephen. Next question, please.
Next question is from Jose Ruiz at Barclays. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. So two questions. The first one, if I look at the third quarter, both in gas power, services, sales, and international LNG, which touch minimum levels, which one would you expect to recover quicker in coming quarters? And secondly, I will give it another try. Can you share with us the payback period of the upfront cost or penalties of renegotiation? You don't have to give me a precise number. I just wonder if it's lower than 1 year or larger than 1 year. I'm just trying to understand when we will see the benefits from these renegotiations. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jose, for both questions. Regarding the first one, I think that we will see improvement on both businesses. On which will it be faster or not? I mean, I think that it depends on how you see it, but I think that we should be seeing improvement definitely on both businesses. Regarding the payback, I think that giving you an idea of the payback, I don't know whether that would be helpful, and if it were helpful, I would be giving you insight about the level of discount that we've had. So I think I'm not going to go to you in this one.
All right, then moving to final question, please.
The final question comes from Jorge Alonso from Societe Generale. Please go ahead, Jorge.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my questions. I have just three questions, please. Can you just give us an order of magnitude about the pipeline in renewables that GPG and the ones you have in Spain? Just the project that you have identified, the typical definition of the pipeline in renewables. The second one is related to the bad debt, the impact of bad debt in 9 months results, and what do you expect in coming quarters if things seem to be improving, or do you still think that in terms of bad debt, there is more to come until full recovery will be felt in consumers? Pockets. The last one is regarding the Mexico gas distribution. In the past quarter, we have seen even more decline or bigger decline in volumes, but an improvement in the margins, basically because you said that you were optimizing the portfolio in the part of probably it's not regulated, but it's on the supply side. But in the Q3, we have seen a big decline in the margin, in the EBITDA per megawatt hour. If you can tell us if something has changed or why it has happened this in this quarter. Thank you.
All right, so on the renewables pipeline, we're going to give you more than that, but we'll give you more than that in the capital market space. So we'll give you the pipeline of GPG in Spain. We'll give you the targeted capex that we have for by the way, the next prolonged period of years. We'll give you our strategy in terms of the capital structure that we're targeting, the strategy on Governance to incorporate business partners, the preference on whether or not to go wind, solar, or others. All these elements will be addressed in the CMD. So just again, just wait. It's not going to be. You're not going to have to wait too long for the answers.
Hi, Jorge. And moving to your two questions regarding bad debt, the main cause that we have seen for the bad debt deterioration is basically the prohibition that we have in several countries to disconnect customers that do not pay. As far as those provisions are given, we think that there's going to be improvement in the bad debt that we're seeing in those countries. So I think that we are already seeing that in some of the countries on which we are present. And actually, moving forward, the thing is the, how those provisions are going to be, and it will depend on how the COVID evolves or not, which, has, which was the main trigger in the past for introducing those measures. But as long as they're lifted, we would should be seeing an improvement on bad debt. Moving on to Mexico, I think that what we're seeing basically on this third quarter is mainly an FX deterioration that is greater in this quarter than in previous ones. But I don't think that we've seen substantial changes. I mean, in the tariff is exactly the same as the one that we've had the rest of the year. And in the volumes, although there are some swings, the swings are basically the big swings in demand are basically in the industrial customers, the big industrial customers and some generation, which do not have a big impact on the demand. So I would say that what you're witnessing there is mainly FX.
Thank you. Thank you, John and Stephen and everyone for your question. This concludes our Q&A session and our results presentation. So we thank you very much for joining and participating. If any questions you know, come up or feel unanswered, feel free to reach out to the Capital Markets team. We look forward to continuing our discussion with you guys. And we're going to be continue to working hard in preparing the Capital Markets Day that should be announced fairly soon. So thanks everyone for joining, and be safe and be well. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.